formed briefly before dissipating.
Yes, I took their prince, the last prince of Ghazalbaraz. He is precious to me. I keep him with me, always, and will, until the day I grow bored of these arid lands and the scuttling prey that inhabits it.
Suthrin laughed. That's not the story I heard.
Oh?
I heard that you remained here out of fear. Suthrin forced a laugh. Shaiish has claimed so many of your kind. They say that Armin Hrith hides in the wastes, hoping the war will pass him by, that the Soul Flayer is nothing more than a scavenger picking the bones left behind by more faithful celebrants. The demon snarled. It thrust its chitinous claw at Suthrin.
Choose your words with care, little glowbug. You are alone.
I'm done with words. Suthrin snatched his boltstorm pistol free of its holster and loosed a shot. One of the gemstones on the demon's abdomen burst as the bolt struck home. Armin Hrith shrilled in rage as a soft will-o'-the-wisp of soul light fluttered upwards through the demon's grasping hands.
Thief!
The demon capered, trying to catch the light as it swam upwards and away towards the roof of the cavern above. Suthrin fired again and again, backing away with each shot. Gems burst like blisters, releasing soft puffs of radiance, souls long denied their rest by the demon's greed. With every shattered bauble, the demon grew more enraged. It loped after him.
I will tear your soul to pieces to replace that which you have taken,
it screamed. It drew the blades that hung from its war harness as it ran, and slashed apart a nearby pillar in a fit of petulance. Suthrin raced up the steps and into the temple through the slabbed archway that marked the entrance. The rotunda was full of pillars, each carved with thousands of runes, names he knew, or so the Ghazal Zagas had claimed. The names of the dead, going back to the founding of the city. At the heart of the rotunda was the vast pool from which all the water in the city flowed. It bubbled and flowed, as fresh as the day the first Dwardin had discovered it. A colossal statue of Ghazal sat atop a dais of dark stone, overlooking the waters. The god statue was draped in a burial shroud of shadows and dust, his features obscured. Suthrin lost himself among the pillars, moving as quietly as possible. He could hear the clop of the demon's hooves on the stone floor.
I can taste your fear and your desire on the wind,
it growled. Its voice was thick with silky menace and promise all in one. It echoed through the pillars.
I will add your soul to my collection, little glowbug. You will dangle upon my chest, and your screams will soothe me to sleep ere I grow tired of my games.
Suthrin didn't answer. He heard a voice chanting, Elder Judd. The runesingers were gathering outside the temple now. They had waited centuries for this day. The jaws of the trap were clashing shut. He heard the scrape of chitin on stone, and tensed. It was close.
Why do you not answer me, little glowbug? I thought your kind liked to talk. So boastful, you storm riders! You wield declarations like swords!
It chuckled again, and he could almost see the ghastly smile on its twisted features.
Do you tremble at the thought of my gentle touch, glowbug? As well you should!
A fog of perfumed musk suddenly enveloped Suthrin. He spun. A chitinous claw thrust itself towards him. He leapt aside. The claw gouged the pillar in half, casting rubble across the floor. The Keeper of Secrets lunged into view, hauling itself around another pillar. Its eyes blazed with a monstrous greed.
Oh, I have such sights to show you, it snarled. Nightmares and ecstasies beyond any you can conceive. I will flay your soul from the meat. I will make adornments from your bones and wear your screaming skull into the eternities yet to come.
Sathryn lunged, his starbound blade licking out across the demon's taunting muzzle. Amenhrith jerked back with a shriek of pain. Sathryn twisted aside, narrowly avoiding a wild slash from the demon's blade. He whistled sharply, and Gwyllith leapt down from the top of the pillars, where she had been waiting. The griffcharger's weight caught the demon by surprise and knocked it stumbling. The great beast clung to the demon's broad back, tail lashing. Her beak stabbed down into the alabaster flesh, releasing a spurt of sickly sweet ichor. Amenhrith shrieked, clawing at its attacker. Sathryn ducked beneath a flailing claw and drove his sword into the demon's elongated torso, twisting it upwards with all his strength. It gave a tooth-rattling shriek and dropped a heavy fist onto him, driving him to one knee. A second blow caught him on the chest and sent him skidding backwards. The demon tore the screeching griffcharger from her perch and hurled her into a pillar. She crumpled to the ground with a muted whine. Sathryn rolled onto his stomach. Pain beat at his temples, and his chest felt as if it had been caved in. He coughed and tasted blood. The chanting was louder now, beating at the air like hammer strokes. The air felt heavy with something. Anticipation, he thought. He glanced towards the statue of Ghazal, and it seemed as if the god's eyes were gleaming. It was time. The trap snapped shut. Amenhrith touched the ragged wounds opened in its flesh with something akin to wonder.
How exquisite! It has been centuries since my flesh was ravaged so.
It fixed Sathryn with its yellow gaze.
I thank you, Glowbug. Let me show you my gratitude properly. Let me show you mine first,
Sathryn wheezed, hauling himself upright. He rose to one knee, spots swimming across his vision.
For the gift! Gift!
The demon hesitated, head tilted. Sathryn held up the ruby. He'd managed to chop it loose just before the demon had swatted him aside. It pulsed with an unsettling warmth, as if there were a fire within its crimson facets. Amenhrith looked down at its chest, and then back at him. It took a heavy step towards him, claw extended.
Give it back, Glowbug, or I will ensure your torments are legendary, even by the heady standards of the pavilions of pleasure.
A kind offer, but not one I care to take.
Sathryn slammed the flickering gemstone down onto the stone floor, shattering it. Outside the temple, the song of the runesingers rose to a rolling crescendo, shaking the very stones underfoot. They fell silent as the echoes of the ruby's demise faded. In the quiet that followed, Amenhrith laughed, and Sathryn felt his sense of triumph ebb.
And what was that supposed to achieve? The demon sneered. What did you think would happen, Glowbug? I am no mere courtesan to be banished at the whim of a mortal. I am Amenhrith, the Soul Flayer. I have wallowed in the dust of a thousand worlds and seen reality itself shatter beneath the awful weight of my lord's gentle gaze. I have worn ghosts as baubles and hunted entire peoples to extinction in the world that was. And I will do the same here.
The shards of ruby shone suddenly with a soft light, interrupting the demon. Blood-red shadows crawled across the pillars and floor. Curls of cerise smoke rose from the fragments, twisting and coalescing with one another until they became a vaguely Dwadin-shaped mass. Something that might have been a face turned towards the demon and twisted into a wrathful expression. A wordless cry boomed out of the stones and air, and the demon stepped back.
What is this? You could not challenge me while you lived, little prince. What makes you think you can do so now?
The smoky shape took a step forwards, its hunched form sprouting an amorphous shield and something resembling an axe. The temple seemed to shake with its tread. Sathryn caught sight of ghostly shapes drifting through the pillars. The dead come to answer their long-lost prince's call.
He isn't alone! Sathryn said.
While the demon held the soul of their prince captive, the Ghazal Zagaz had been unable to act against it. Now, with the ruby shattered and the soul free, the dead of Ghazalbaraz, raised up by the song of the runesingers, could have their long-delayed vengeance. Sathren smiled. A good plan. A fitting plan. A grim dirge rose from the spectres as they gathered, encircling the demon in a ring of insubstantial bodies. Sathren could hear the faint crash of steel and the crack of stone. Motes of pale light floated within ghostly skulls, the eyes of the dead fixed on the author of their torment.
"Uzkul,"
they moaned as one.
"Uzkul! Uzkul! Uzkul!"
The Keeper of Secrets turned, trying to keep all of the gathering spirits in sight.
"Begone, shades! There is no joy to be had from your pallid essences!"
It swept out a claw dismissively, trying to disperse the horde. The dead struck as the claw passed through them. Ghostly axes and hammers caught the limb, and ichor spurted. Amenhrith screamed in rage and pain. The demon jerked its injured limb back.
"No! No, this isn't right!"
It whirled, eyes fixed on Sathren.
"What have you done?"
"What I do best," Sathren said as he rose to his feet. Gwyllith was on her feet as well, if somewhat battered. He caught hold of her and hauled himself into the saddle.
"And now I leave you to it."
He thumped the griff-charger in the ribs, and she leapt away with a shriek, even as the demon lunged for them. Amenhrith crashed awkwardly into a pillar as they avoided its grasp, and screamed in fury. It clattered after them, smashing rubble aside in its haste, and the ghosts boiled up around it like storm clouds. A typhoon of spirits, led by the crimson essence of the prince, surrounded the blundering demon, striking at it from all sides and angles. They blinded it, slowed it, trapped it. And there was another presence there as well, something greater than any ghost and mightier than any demon. It seemed to gather itself in the limits of the temple, readying itself as Sathren urged Gwyllith towards the entrance. The shadows thickened, and the voices of the dead were echoed by a deep tolling rising up from somewhere below. Not a bell, this, but a wordless cry, like the crash of stone into the sea. It roared out as the griff-charger leapt through the archway and down the steps. Sathren turned his steed about, sword in hand, to face the archway. The Keeper of Secrets clawed at the entrance, hands gripping either side of the aperture. It strained, as if against unseen bonds. Its mouth was open, but Sathren could hear nothing save that roaring cry. A wind rose up from somewhere and caught at the creature, forcing it back. Beneath the roar came a grinding sound, like stone rasping against stone. One by one, the remaining gemstones on the demon's flesh burst. Ghostly hands clutched at the soul flayer's limbs and head. The demon's eyes bulged as it fought against the dead.
"Uzkul! Uzkul! Uzkul!"
Sathren glanced around. Judd and the other runesingers chanted as they approached, their bells tolling somberly. With every peal of the bells, the demon's grip on the aperture seemed to grow weaker, its claws digging deep trenches in the stone. Then, with a final thunderclap, a dark shape, massive and indistinct, caught hold of the soul flayer and jerked it backwards into the dark of the temple and out of sight. It did not even have a chance to scream. The runesingers ceased their song. The sound of the bells faded. All was silence, save for the burble of water. Judd thumped the ground with a ferrule of his staff. Slowly the spirits of the dead emerged from the darkness. Their prince stood among them, his form as indistinct as before, recognizable only by the raw red radiance. Judd lifted his staff and murmured. The spirits of the dead Dwadin wavered like smoke and dispersed in shreds and tangles. They drifted upwards, towards the roof of the cavern and the moonlight streaming through. Something like thunder rumbled in the depths, and Sathren felt its reverberations in his bones. He thought it might be laughter. Judd smiled sadly.
"Ghazal is pleased. Our oath is fulfilled at last."
Sathren looked at him. They say Nagash devoured the other gods of the dead and added their might to his own.
Yes, that is what they say,
Judd shrugged.
And yet, what is death to a god?
He scooped up a handful of dust and let the wind pull it from his hand.
Dust, and less than dust.
He sighed and looked at Suthren.
But that is a matter for another day. For now, we will fulfill our oath to you. We will lead you where you wish to go.
Suthren nodded solemnly. I expected no less. He laughed suddenly and turned Gwyllith about towards the sounds of fighting.
But first, our task is not yet done. There are still demons to hunt and an oasis to free, as I promised.
That was A Dirge of Dust and Steel by Josh Reynolds, read by John Banks. Callis and Tol, The Old Ways by Nick Horth, read by John Banks. Armand Callis winced as the Marsh Strider bucked beneath him. Every time the beast moved, his legs rubbed painfully against the rough hide saddle that was lashed around the creature's segmented body. They had been travelling for hours, and he still hadn't got used to the Strider's awkward rolling gait as it stretched out its six long limbs to balance on the soupy morass beneath them. He sighed as he peered through the gathering fog, hoping to catch sight of their destination looming into view. It was useless. He could barely see more than a few meters ahead.
"How much farther?" he shouted. "Soon!" grunted their guide, a wizened old fellow with an expression that could turn milk sour.
Callis's Marsh Strider clicked and hissed before releasing an arcing jet of fluid from its mandibles. On the whole, Callis decided that he preferred horses.
"Marsh Point is close,"
said Hanover Tol, mounted upon his own strider to Callis's left. Beneath his signature wide-brimmed hat, the older man's face was chapped pink by the cold and had several days' worth of stubble across his chin. Callis rubbed his own face ruefully. His typically neat and well-groomed moustache was tapering wildly out of control, and a coarse beard itched beneath the scarf wrapped around his mouth.
"Follow my lead once we arrive," said Tol. "The feud between the Junikers and the Desreeds is on the verge of erupting into a full-scale border war." "No wonder," muttered Callis. "I'd be miserable too if I lived out here."
The Bracken Marsh was a featureless expanse of foul-smelling mud and grime that lay to the east of the great city of Excelsis. It was a bubbling pit of slime and weeds that reached to the mouth of the enormous Ulwire Forest. They had avoided the winding trade road that led through the marsh to the frontier township, as Tol had wanted to make it to Marsh Point as swiftly as possible. Unfortunately, marsh striders were the only way to cross the fenland. Travelling by foot was a sure way of getting yourself drowned or eaten by the primitive beast that dwelled within its murky depths. Despite their immense size and vicious barbed forelimbs, the mantis-like beasts were completely docile. Each of their six legs ended in a tangle of thick hairs that spread out across the rippling surface of the water, forming buoyant pads that allowed the striders to skip across the marsh with surprising speed.
"The disappearance of Adrek Junica has turned a tense situation into a volatile one," said Tol. "House Junica has long accused the Desreeds of trying to undermine their trade in silk steel, and now they have an excuse to spill blood. If that happened, the free guilds would not receive their shipments of silk steel."
Silk steel was a substance woven by arachnids found within the Ulwire. Thin and light, it possessed a fearsome tensile strength, meaning that it could be woven into light-padded armor that stopped blades and arrows as surely as steel plate. As Excelsis lacked vast natural deposits of metal, silk steel was vital for outfitting the local regiments. Without it, the already undermanned city guard would find itself under-equipped, too.
"Indeed," said Tol, nodding. "We're here to try and neutralize the fray by uncovering whether Lord Junica's firstborn son
was indeed slain by the hands of the Desrides, or simply drank too much, stumbled into the marsh, and drowned. "Hardly seems like vital work for an agent of the Order of Azir," said Kallis. "Couldn't they have sent a detachment from the city guard?" "The city guard is stretched parchment thin as it is," said Tol. "The battle for Excelsis left the city weak and vulnerable. If it comes under siege again, it will fall. Trade has been severely hampered, and the people are ready to riot. Kallis, this infighting could be the spark that ignites a full-scale uprising." Tol paused. "We would have no choice but to set the White Reaper loose. That's not an outcome I would relish." Kallis fought off a shudder. He had once come face to face with Lord Veritant Serus Centanus, the White Reaper of Excelsis, and had barely escaped with his life. If Centanus was loosed upon the inhabitants of the city, the streets would run with blood.
"Here!"
growled their guide, pointing one thin finger into the distance. Following his gesture, they could see the lambent glow of torches flickering. Rising up out of the mist like the backbone of some drowned behemoth, a perimeter wall loomed over a short pier of mildewed wood. It was a well-made fortification, as these things went. The wood was smoothed and sanded down to prevent anyone scaling it, and dotted along the line were swivel-mounted arbalests with large hook-shaped magazines. A great circular tower loomed above the parapet, and atop the battlements, Kallis could see a heavy ballista aiming out into the gloom.
"The ones who built this place knew their business," Kallis said. "You'd only require a few men to hold this wall against the horde."
"You're looking at Junica Coin," said Tol. "They employed the most skilled Dwarden siege smiths when they built this place. You don't survive out here beyond the city's reach unless you can defend yourself. Their private armies are larger than many Free Guild regiments, House Desrides included."
Kallis's eyebrows quipped.
"I'm surprised that's allowed."
"Both Desreed and Junica are old Azir stock. At one time or another, they both had figures on the Council of Azaheim. The men we're here to see, though, are minor scions of the great houses. Still, they're powerful figures, with a bottomless supply of coin and the ear of the Excelsis Council. As long as they pay their tithes and maintain their shipments, the city is content to allow their standing armies."
As they approached the bank, the marsh striders hauled themselves out of the dank swamp, flicking their long limbs free of foul-smelling weeds.
"Who passes?"
came a shout from the palisade gatehouse, where a bucket-helmed face peered down at them, silhouetted against the sickly yellow sky. The figure was leaning against a swivel gun mounted upon the edge of the wall.
"We are expected," shouted Tol, dropping nimbly from the saddle, patting the beast's chitinous armor-plated leg affectionately.
The thing gave a shrill chirp and lowered its many-eyed head to the mossy earth, loudly slurping at a clump of moss.
"I am Hanover Tol, agent of the Order of Azir. Open the gate."
Even from a distance away, Kallis could see the color drain from the man's face.
"The witch hunter," breathed the guard.
The figure made a frantic gesture to someone on the other side of the wall, and there was a clanking, grinding sound. Slowly, the great gate began to creak open.
"So this is Marsh Point," said Kallis. "Hardly a sight to set the blood astir."
It was far from the worst hovel that Kallis had ever laid eyes on. Indeed, the poor quarters of Excelsis were far more run down, but a tangible pall of misery hung over the cluttered white stone houses that formed the main street. The construction was simple, functional, and rather ugly, with thatched green roofs slanting away into the fog, and uneven masonry.
"Someone threw this town up in a hurry," said Kallis.
"It's more fort than town, truly," said Tol. "The only people who live here are soldiers and workers from the silk steel plantations. We're probably the only outsiders these people have seen in months. Few travellers or merchants risk the trade road this far east."
Shrouded figures hustled across a road of rough-hewn cobbles in the fading light, glancing at the newcomers with nervous eyes. The central plaza, such as it was, featured a statue of an imposing warrior, a stormcast eternal with hammer raised to the skies.
The grandeur of the craftsmanship was marred by the smear of verdigris and mould, and the hazy green light that filtered through the darkening clouds gave the noble image an unsettling pallid glow. The looming towers and the high wall cast the squat, unremarkable little town in shadow, giving it a claustrophobic feel. Several shabby-looking guards, dressed in leather jerkins, stared down at them from a walkway that ran the length of the outer wall. One strode down the steps to meet them, removing a woolen cap as he did so, to reveal a boyish, earnest face, dark-skinned and fresh-eyed. He looked barely out of his teens.
"They told us to expect visitors," he said, "but we weren't expecting you here for another few days. We thought you'd take the trade road."
"I would prefer to resolve the situation here as swiftly as possible," said Tol.
As he stepped forward, he removed his wide-brimmed hat and reached into his coat. He withdrew a waxen scroll marked with the image of a blazing comet.
"Sigmar's teeth,"
whispered the guard as he studied the paper. His eyes went wide.
"Sorry, sire. Forgive my blasphemy. I
have business with Lords Fenrol Desreed and Kirvan Junica," said Tol, ignoring the man's discomfort. "Send word of my arrival to both."
Begging your pardon, sire, but they won't leave their estates," mumbled the guard. "Neither of them. We've already seen blood spilled, and with the Junica boy missing, they're readying for war."
He shook his head.
"They've stopped the patrols and blocked the roads. There's only 50 of us defending this entire town. Heavens forbid the aurochs come pillaging and burning, or the bog devils swarm the walls at the White Witch's command."
"Your name?" said Tol.
"Guardsman Rolkir, sire," said the man.
"Send word to both the houses, Guardsman Rolkir, and return to your post. Your diligence is noted. It would appear that there are some souls yet in Marshpoint who remember their duty."
Rolkir seemed surprised. He gave a slight nod and scrambled away up the stairs, shouting orders to his men.
"Son,"
shouted Tol. The guard turned.
"Where's the tavern?"
"The Moss Throne,"
said Rolkir, gesturing to a rather shabby two-story building across the cobbled square. Dim light shone through the lower windows, but other than that it looked more like an abandoned barn than a place to catch a good night's sleep. The sloped roof was thick with ivy, which draped down the mouldy wooden walls like strands of wet hair. The windows were round, and the entire structure sat oddly slanted on the street, as if it was about to slide into the bog. Still, it was a tavern, and they'd have ale. Callis had drunk in far worse places.
"Obliged,"
said Callis, snapping a friendly salute.
"Tell the Lords Desreed and Junica that they can grace us with their presence at this fine establishment."
"Sire," nodded Rolkir in agreement, "just supposing, but what if they refuse?"
"They will not," said Tol, "if they value their continued existence."
They took a table in the centre of the tavern and ordered food along with a thin, tasteless ale. Gradually the clientele filtered out, eyeing the newcomers uneasily as they left. The common folk were mostly slight, pale figures, lean from hard work, but rather sickly-looking. No one but the barkeep, a rotund man of middling years, with a drooping moustache and sad eyes, spoke to them. Callis, tired though he was, could feel the aura of tension and unease that surrounded them. It wasn't merely their presence that unsettled the locals. The town had the distinct feel of a city facing a siege. A burgeoning sense of dread reminded him of times he had spent awaiting battle, knowing that bloodshed was coming, but unable to do anything other than stand ready until the killing started. After perhaps an hour, they heard the clatter of hooves outside. Callis moved to the window, while Tol continued to pick at a rather sorry slice of grey meat. Peering out of the misted glass, Callis saw 20 soldiers riding pale mares and carrying long forked spears emerging out of the haze. They flanked a great carriage of crimson and gold, shining gaudily amidst its unassuming surroundings. These soldiers were a different breed to the ragged fellows manning the palisade. They wore thick cloth tunics with silver pads upon the shoulders and chest, and their armour glittered in the gloomy evening light. The image of an ether hawk in flight was embossed upon their chest plates and upon the barding of their mounts. Callis recognized the motif, the symbol of House Desreed. The same image hung from the banners of Excelsis's Market Square and soared above the halls of justice. He returned to the table and drained the rest of his ale, wincing slightly at the silty, bitter aftertaste. A few moments later, the door opened, letting in a drizzle of rain and a chill wind. The soldiers entered in perfect parade lockstep, their boots stamping out a staccato rhythm on the wooden floor of the tavern. They spread out in a fan on either side of the door, slamming the hafts of their spears down and raising their heads imperiously. The tavern hound, a morose-looking beast with rheumy eyes and a matted mane of blue-grey fur, got up from its position under Toll and Callis's table and sauntered across the floor. It paused briefly to idly lap at its hindquarters and gaze at the newcomers.
"My name is Captain Lysian Kaltagar," said the lead soldier in a clipped Azerite accent.
He wore a half-face helmet with a bright blue plume and was the only guard not carrying a long spear. Instead, he rested his hand on a fine silver longsword at his belt. He removed his helm, revealing a wave of blonde hair and an angular face locked in a permanent half-sneer. Callis disliked the man on sight.
"May I present my lord Fenrol Var Desreed, the Eagle of the East, Warden of Marshpoint and the Scourge of the Forest Greenskins."
Callis glanced at Toll. The witch hunter leaned back in his chair, a long-suffering expression upon his face. A man entered the tavern. At first, Callis thought it was several men, wrapped up in a single enormous bedsheet. The mighty Lord Desreed was far from the statuesque patrician his entourage had intimated. He was a huge, wobbling bulge of a man, enormously fat, with no suggestion of muscle beneath. A toga of rich crimson silk struggled vainly to lend an air of Azerite nobility to the wall of flesh, but to no avail. Desreed's eyes narrowed as he laid eyes on them, two sunken pools of glassy ice within his pink slab of a face. The man's thin blonde hair had been separated and slicked back by rain, and he carried a look of utmost irritation.
"So, you are the findsman, are you?"
he said to Toll, his voice a deep, throaty gurgle.
"You believe it proper to force me out of my home and onto the streets where Juniker's assassins lurk? You drag me to this hovel like I'm some minor cutpurse to be ordered about at your own will."
Toll wrapped his fingers on the table and stared levelly at Lord Desreed.
"Take a seat, my lord,"
he said, and there was not a hint of irritation or anger in his words. Not for the first time, Callis wondered how the man remained so calm.
"Lord Kirvan Var Juniker will be joining us presently. Then together we three will unpick this mess."
Desreed's eyes widened.
"You invite the very man that seeks my death, who baselessly blames me for the abduction of his firstborn son, as if I would sully my hands by laying them upon that thin-blooded wretch. I summoned you here to deal with that madman once and for all, not to—"
"You do not summon the order," said Toll, and though his voice remained level, there was a sliver of ice in his words. "You do not make demands of us. Now, sit."
The noble's great lips quivered in astonished rage. He was not a man used to being spoken to so curtly, Callis thought, with some satisfaction.
"May I offer you a drink?" said Toll, indicating his cup of ale.
Desreed snorted, turning his nose up at the humble spread that lay before the witch hunter.
"Wine!"
he barked at his retainers, who rushed back outside into the rain. Desreed snapped his fingers, and another two perfumed servants rushed forth, carrying an immense curule chair between them. They set it down. The man eased his bulk into it with a groan of protesting timber. They waited another 30 minutes or so in interminable silence before they heard the clatter of approaching horses. Desreed's men moved to surround their master, who slurped the last dregs from a horn of pale, sweet-smelling mead. The door swung open, and a stocky man in black leather and chainmail entered. The newcomer took in the scene, fixing on Toll for a moment. The witch hunter met his gaze. Eventually, the man slammed one fist on the door, and a group of heavy-set men entered, armored in gold-plated scale armor and long black hoods. Each carried a black iron mace, fashioned in the shape of a comet. They held their weapons at the ready as they filtered in, glaring daggers at Desreed and his own gleaming host. Callis let one hand fall to his pistol and readied a foot to overturn the table if things went awry, as they typically did in these situations. If Tol felt the tension, he did not show it. A thin, aging man, dressed in austere black, entered, flanked by two more guards. He wore a military-style jacket and breastplate, polished and buckled with parade-ground precision. His greying hair was shaved close to the scalp, and he wore his mustache thin and curled with wax. "This one fancies himself a military man," thought Callis. A strangely common delusion amongst the noble classes, that. Lord Juniker took in his modest surroundings with the air of a man examining some unpleasant substance stuck to the sole of his boot. His face was gaunt, where Desreed's was flabby, and his brow was furrowed in a cold glare that only intensified when he caught a glimpse of his rival.
"Lord Juniker," said Tol, tearing a hunk of black bread in half and dabbing it into the thin stew. "Please join us. I am Hanover Tol of the Hallowed Order of Azir."
"You ask me to sit beside the man who killed my son," hissed Kirvan Juniker. "I should paint the floor with this fat bastard's blood."
Desreed spluttered in outrage, and his guards stepped forwards, spears lowering threateningly. Juniker's men took a pace back, readying their own weapons. There was a muffled yelp as the barkeep dived behind his counter to the sound of smashing glass. Tol took another bite of bread and washed it down with a swig of ale.
"I did not kill your idiotic spawn, but I wish I had," shouted Desreed, slamming his meaty fists upon the table. "The only good Juniker is a dead Juniker, and if you insult my honor again, I shall seek the satisfaction. I warn you now."
"Enough,"
said Tol, and the two men looked at the witch hunter in surprise. Seemingly oblivious to their disbelief, Tol took up a napkin in one hand and dabbed at his mustache.
"Stand your men down. If there is even a drop of spilled blood at this table, then word will make it back to Excelsis, I assure you. Next time the Order dispatches an agent to your doorstep, they will not send a single man. They will send in the hounds, my lords. Your lands and your profits will be confiscated. Both of you will be dragged before the halls of justice to explain why you defied the word of the God King. Perhaps we shall give you to the White Reaper, so that he may uncover the true extent of your failures."
Lord Desreed's red face went suddenly pale, and even Lord Juniker looked unnerved at the threat. Callis allowed himself a small grin. There was a distinct pleasure to be found in watching Tol work.
"This is a private matter," Kirvan Juniker stuttered. "There is no treason here. I only wish to know the truth behind the disappearance of my son."
"Disrupting the flow of vital supplies in a time of war is treason," said Tol. "If I possessed the same disposition of many of my kin, you both would already be returned to the city dungeons, there to wait for the hangman's rope around your necks. Now sit, my lord."
Juniker eased himself into a chair. His bodyguards stood on either side.
"Pass me the ale," said Tol, gesturing at Lord Juniker.
The noble looked startled at the blunt request, as if Tol had just fired his pistol into the ceiling. His attendants stared at each other in confusion.
"Excuse me," Juniker said.
"The ale," Tol repeated.
To Callis's surprise, Juniker reached out an uncertain hand and passed the jug of sour-smelling liquid to the witch hunter, who took it and poured himself a fresh cup.
"You accuse Lord Desreed of murder without proof," said Callis.
Juniker glanced at him, surprised, as if he had not noticed him at all before he had spoken.
"Long has the feud between Juniker and Desreed raged," he said. "When we forged a path on the frontier with blood and spirit, the Desreeds followed us like parasites, leeching off our noble work, as they have always done."
"You dare!"
roared Lord Desreed, spittle flying from his lips.
House Desreed desires only to serve the will of Sigmar, as we have always done. It is the Junikers who provoke us, stealing away the riches of the land for themselves alone, threatening honest workers and harassing my soldiers at every possible turn. Excelsis is built upon the blood of the Desreeds. We were here long before the Junikers, and we shall be here long after your ragged house crumbles into dust.
My steward, Gedrin, saw your men pursue my son into the forest, said Junica, indicating the unassuming man in the chainmail hauberk. They were drunk, seeking sport. My firstborn son, Aldrich, was a strong, brave boy, and your men ran him down like a dog, at your order, no doubt.
My soldiers did nothing of the sort. Yet I know that you yourself resort to murder all too quickly, Junica, snarled Desreed. As did your son. On the very night you claim he was assaulted, it was he who murdered a Desreed man in cold blood, then fled the scene of the crime rather than face the consequences. Half a dozen more of my men have disappeared also. No doubt their bodies have been dumped in some stinking bog with Junica daggers in their backs.
You witnessed this altercation? Callus asked Gedrin.
I did, the man said, nodding. It is as the Lord Junica states. Words were exchanged, and swords were drawn. I do not know who struck the first blow, but Aldrich was wounded on the arm in the struggle. He fled on horseback. The Desreeds chased him.
The man spoke with a soft, lilting accent, quite at odds with his coarse and weathered face. Callis guessed that Gedrin was in his third decade or thereabouts, but he had the rough look of a man who plied his trade in the wilds. Callis noticed the familiar curling lines of blue ink tattoos emerging from under the man's collar. A fellow reclaimed. A descendant of the nomadic tribes who had once lived here, before Sigmar's tempest brought the light of the heavens back into the realms, rather than a great Azir-born family like his master's. Perhaps that was why he appeared to possess some humility.
They went beyond the eastern gate and into the Ulwire, he continued. I followed after them, but they were horsed and I was not. I lost them in the darkness, but I heard screams, so returned to seek help. "They're words of a low-born mercenary employed by the Junica," said Captain Celtigar, with a dismissive snort. "How utterly convincing! I tell you now, upon my honour and that of my men, no such incident took place. This one lies."
Gedrin simply shrugged.
"It is what I saw." "How many days past was this?" asked Tol.
5 days, sire.
And you have returned since to search the area?
We have. We found no sign of Master Junica, nor of his pursuers.
It is possible, then, that something else could have occurred within the Ulwire.
Not murder, Tol continued.
Gedrin shrugged.
Perhaps, but the Desreed soldiers were after blood.
You will take me and my associate there, said Tol. You will guide us to the spot where you lost track of them. If what you say is true, there will be traces of their passing.
Gedrin looked at his master for confirmation. Lord Junica nodded slightly.
Captain Celtigar will accompany you, said Lord Desreed, along with 2 men of his choosing, just to ensure that this is not some foolish attempt at revenge.
I have such a thing as honour, you bloated fiend, snapped Junica. A concept that escapes you entirely.
Their bickering was about to start over anew when Tol slammed his fist on the table.
Silence, he barked.
At dawn, we will enter the Ulwire and find out the truth of this. My lords, you will remain in Marshpoint until I tell you otherwise. And I warn you both. If blood is shed on these streets, I promise I will ensure that a price is paid. Now leave.
Callis followed Tull out of the eastern gate of Marshpoint early the next morning, rubbing at his itching eyes. It had not been a relaxing sleep in the cramped guest chambers of the Moss Throne. The room had smelled of mildew and rot, and he had been kept awake by the sounds of buzzing insects and a slow, steady dripping from the roof above his head.
"So, what do you think of our lords Junica and Desreed?" Tol asked.
Callis scratched his beard and yawned.
"They would each see the other destroyed if they could," he said. "That's clear. But I'm not sure about a murder plot. Lord Desreed hardly seems like a master schemer."
"Do not underestimate him," said Tol. "Marsh Point may not be a glamorous place, but the silk steel plantations are of great value to both houses. They would not send Lackwits out here to oversee one of their most valuable trades. Fenrol Desreed looks like a greedy fool, but clever men often hide behind the mama's mask."
"Why the firstborn son?" said Callis. "Why not the old man himself? If you're going to start a war, why not make that your opening move? If this is a Desreed scheme, what's the end goal?"
Tol rolled his hat in his hands and nodded thoughtfully.
"Be watchful as we enter the Ulwire," he said, checking the firing pan of his four-barreled pistol. "Observe all. Discount nothing."
"I've patrolled the wilds before," said Callis. "I know well what it's like out there."
"I do not just mean the forest," Tol replied. But before Callis could ask what he meant, the witch hunter strode over to greet the Junica steward Gedrin, who was waiting for them on a flooded path that led out towards the distant spectre of the Ulwire forest.
The man carried a well-made composite bow and a heavy-bladed knife at his hip. He was wrapped in a large wolfskin cloak that smelled strongly of wet fur. He dipped his head in greeting as they approached. The vast, ominous expanse of woodland that was the Ulwire lurked on the eastern edge of the town, emerging out of the early morning murk. The canopy was an impenetrable carpet of dark green, the trunks of the trees below gnarled and twisted, leading into darkness. A tide of sickly green mist rolled out from the bog, swirling around the mouth of the forest like the breath of a fallen giant.
"So that's where we're headed," Callis said. "Seems like an inviting sort of place."
Gedrin smiled.
"The Ulwire is dangerous, yes, but it is also a place of life. For many years my people walked its secret paths, hidden from those that wished us harm. It protected us, granted us all that we required. One need only show the forest the proper respect, and they can walk amongst its shadows unscathed."
"You almost sound as though it's a sentient thing," said Callis.
"Perhaps it is. These lands are rife with magic. Within the Ulwire dwell things more ancient than a mortal could possibly contemplate," said Gedrin. "The forest belongs to them, not us."
"For now," interrupted Tol. "In time, the light of the God King will reach even the darkest corners of these lands. We will tame this place, and then we will burn away the shadows.
Some evils cannot be banished so easily."
"I did not say that it would be easy," said Tol, who then went to converse with the gaggle of nervous-looking guards managing the east gate, leaving Gedrin and Callis alone.
"You were raised in the city?" asked the steward.
"I was," Callis replied, "though my family weren't Azerite. I served in the Free Guild for many years." Callis briefly thought to mention his regiment, but decided against it. The Cold Guard of Excelsis had been entirely liquidated for their part in the heretical plot to overthrow the city, after all, and he was the sole survivor. That fact tended to set people on edge, for some unfathomable reason.
"I thought as much," said Gedrin, nodding. "You have a soldier's bearing. It is surprising to me that a man so young, one of the reclaimed no less, is in the employ of the Order. You must be a man of rare talents to be elevated so high."
"I am merely a soldier, as you say, just doing what is asked of me."
Gedrin gave an awkward, sad smile.
"Aren't we all?" he said.
"Yet it seems that we must work twice as hard for half the praise."
"Aye," said Callis. "I won't disagree with you there."
Your master, this witch-hunter, said Gedrin. He is Azirborn, I take it.
Kallis blinked in surprise as he realized he had never thought to ask.
I confess, I have no idea, he said. He's more alike to them than us, I think, said Gedrin. I worry that he does not understand this place, not truly. He is a creature of the crowded street, the shadowed back alley.
They heard boots squelching through the mud and turned to see Tol leading three soldiers along the muddy path towards them, two Desreed guards and the captain, Keltigar. All had pistols strapped to their belts and had ditched their spears for more practical longswords.
Corporals Brujda, said the captain,
indicating the shaven-headed woman.
And Yol.
The latter was a short, stocky, red-headed man with a wispy beard and lazy eyes. The two soldiers gave perfunctory nods. All business. Keltigar cast a withering look at Gedrin.
Where do you insist that this fiction occurred? They pursued the Junica boy this way, along the path and into the forest, said Gedrin. Lies!
He was bleeding from his wounds, and they were striking him with lances.
When this farce is over, I'll have your head for this, savage, snapped Keltigar.
You'll keep a civil tongue in your head, snarled Kallis, moving to within an inch of Keltigar's face, enjoying the look of surprised fury on the man's angular features. The only justice here will be served by the Order of Azir.
For a moment, Kallis thought Keltigar would swing for him. He tensed his arms, ready to block the man's punch and return it in kind.
Stand down, Armand, said Tol. This is not the time nor the place.
Kallis stared into the captain's grey eyes a moment longer, just to let him know the time had long passed where he would suffer the insults and barbs of blue-blooded fools. When he stepped back, Keltigar was all but trembling with rage.
Lead on, Gedrin, the witch-hunter said. I would have us get to the truth of this as soon as possible.
Kallis had never much liked forests. He'd fought in several during his time in the Free Guilds, and these had been amongst his most miserable experiences. The deep woods played tricks on a soldier's mind, made one jump at every sound, at every flickering shadow. The Ulwire was worse than most. It was a twisted labyrinth of curling boughs, smothered in darkness. Its mist swirled around their legs and up to their knees, making every step a potential hazard. Kallis had expected the usual cacophony of sounds, the chattering of insects and the hooting of birds, yet the ominous canopy above them was startlingly silent. He winced at every snapped stick and muttered curse from his companions. If anyone was lurking in wait for them, they would hear the approach from a mile away. They had been walking for perhaps 2 hours, when Yol stumbled, then let out a curse in shock when he realized what had caught his foot. It was a corpse, face down in the soil. The grey flesh and stiffness of the limbs suggested this was at least a few days old. A man armoured in the silver of House Desreed. Kallis rolled the body over with his boot. The dead man's eyes were wide, crazed even, like a frightened deer. His mouth was open in a scream, and blood had caked around his eyes and mouth.
Lartak, breathed the Desreed woman, Brujda. He went missing a few days back, around the same time as the Junica boy. He was an idiot and a drunkard, but a decent enough sort otherwise.
There are no wounds, mused Kallis. Nowhere. How did this man die?
The White Witch, muttered Yol, shaking his head.
Enough with that nonsense, snorted Captain Keltigar.
What's that you say? Asked Kallis. The guard at the gate mentioned that name.
Just a legend, said Keltigar, waving a dismissive hand. A tale concocted by the natives of this region. It's all they ever talk about. The dreaded White Witch of the Ulwire, the taker of children, a ghost whose screams can stop the heart of mortals.
Oh, she is real, said Gedrin softly. These are her lands.
All you people ever talk about are ghosts, spriggans, tolmickles, and bog devils, mocked Keltigar. Backwards nonsense.
This is probably just another fool who got drunk and choked on his own spew.
Gedrin stood and slowly moved off deeper into the tree line.
Horse tracks, he said. They lead this way.
Continue, said Tol.
Callis squinted. I don't know how you can see anything in this fog.
My father taught me to hunt in these woods, said Gedrin. He taught me to track, to move unseen, to hide my trail, to understand and respect the dangers of the wild. These men we seek, the Desreed guards, they may have lived here for many years now, but they've learned no such lessons. Such superstition is beneath them, so they say. They believe only in the power of the God King and scorn the wild tales of uncivilized folk.
If Keltigar is what counts as civilized, I'll gladly remain a so-called savage, muttered Callis, and Gedrin chuckled. They were losing light now, despite the fact that it could not have been more than a few hours since they'd set off. The thick canopy overhead cast them into near-pitch black darkness. Every tangled cluster of vines seemed to take the form of a skulking beast of the forest, and every wisping curl of fog seemed almost alive in its movement, drifting towards them out of the murk. Callis shook his head, angry with himself for allowing this miserable place to unsettle him. Eventually, they came to a wide enclosed clearing, hemmed in on all sides by fat-trunked oaks. A great pool of greenish water spread out before them, dotted by clusters of drooping reeds and sharp rocks. At the far end of the pool, a bank of discolored leaves rose into a steep mound, dominated by a huge, long-dead blackwood tree. In the center of the marsh was a small island of pale flesh and shining metal.
Another body, said Gedrin.
They waded out into the morass to get a closer look. It was a dead horse, half submerged in the fetid water, pallid and bloated. Something had torn great chunks out of the beast's hide, devoured most of its innards. They shoved against the carcass and found a rider beneath, pinned by the animal's weight. The dead man's face was horribly swollen, and his skin a pale green.
"Scavengers," said Gedrin, noticing Callis's uncomfortable look. "These are the bites of several creatures. These, however..."
He indicated scores of smaller slices across the flank of the horse and on the body of the dead man. They looked like gouges, ragged and imprecise, rather than the neat cut of a blade. One such tear had ripped open the unfortunate soldier's cheek, and another had torn a bloody line across his throat. It looked as if the horse had been dragged down into the mud, and the rider had become trapped underneath its weight, helpless against his attackers.
"There's something out here," growled Captain Keltigar, "watching us. I can feel it. Whatever did this, it isn't far away."
Gedrin knelt, placed a hand on the mossy earth, and stared off into the blackness of the forest. After a moment, he shook his head.
"I do not sense anything nearby," he said.
"Who cares a damn what you sense, curse blood?"
snapped Keltigar. Callis had heard that term before. Several of the officers in his regiment had muttered the same insult behind his back, not caring if he heard. It was used to denigrate any who did not hail from blessed Azir, anyone who was, in their eyes, tainted by native blood.
"Use that word again, and I'll break your jaw, you preening shit," said Callis, slowly and deliberately.
Keltigar's men squared up, their hands on the hilts of their swords. The captain stepped close to Callis, who had to lean his head back to maintain eye contact. He was a big brute, this one, but still, Callis had fought bigger.
"You will withdraw that insult," said Keltigar.
"You shall first," said Callis. "You forget who I represent here, Captain. Strike a member of the Order and see the consequences."
"Silence," hissed Tol.
The witch hunter's pistol was raised, aimed out into the swirling fog. In a matter of moments, the mist had grown as thick as smoke and now formed an opaque wall around them. They could barely see more than a dozen feet in any direction. Something stirred with a splash in the water nearby, and they all started, drawing their blades and forming a circle, hostility temporarily forgotten.
I told you,
said Keltagar, his voice tight with fear.
Something is coming!
He had barely finished speaking when something broke the surface of the bog and closed around his leg. Keltagar shrieked in surprise and toppled backwards, sending up a great wave of water as he splashed onto his rear. An arm, rotted through and draped in weeds, was clamped tightly around his ankle. A head emerged, flaps of decaying skin hanging loosely from a grinning skull. The undead thing began to haul itself along the captain's prone form, reaching for his neck with creaking fingers. Kallis put a boot against the undead's chest, kicking it off the screaming Keltagar and into the murky water. He hacked at its neck with his blade. The head came free, sinking into the bog. Another figure erupted from the water behind Corporal Brugstad, wrapping its arms around her neck, teeth tearing at her neck and shattering as they crunched into her plate gorget. She gasped in revulsion and began to awkwardly swipe and slash at its forearms, trying to cut it loose. Yol smashed the pommel of his blade into the undead thing's head, and it fell back into the water, but another was already rising in its place. This corpse looked fresher than the others, and was clad in the same shining metal plate as the Desreed warriors. Its head lolled at a strange, unnatural angle, but Kallis could make out a thin, cruel face with eyes glazed and vacant.
Galter,
stammered Yol, lowering his blade just a fraction. Too much. The risen corpse slashed its own weapon, a rusted saber, across in a wide arc, and there was a splatter of bright crimson. The Desreed guard fell, clutching an opened throat, gurgling and choking. He splashed into the water, and his former companion leapt upon him and drove its sword into his chest again and again.
Move!
Shouted Tol, grabbing Captain Keltagar under the arm and hauling the heavyset man to his feet. The water boiled to life as yet more rotting bodies clambered upright. The witch hunter fired, and a corpse came apart in an explosion of bone and flesh. The stench of rot and acrid gunpowder choked the air.
This way!
Shouted Gedrin, splashing through the water towards a rising bank of dead leaves. They staggered after him, waving their way through the mass of decaying bodies. As they dragged themselves up onto the muddy bank, more dead things erupted from the water, scraping and clawing at their legs. Kallis saw a skeleton rise up ahead of him, a curling branch of thorns protruding from its eye sockets. He drew his pistol and fired. The bullet smashed the skull into 1,000 shards of wet bone, and the thing slumped back beneath the surface. Then they were out, on their hands and knees, dragging themselves free. Tol grabbed Kallis's hand and hauled him up. Kallis turned, searching for the Desreed woman, Brugstad. She was wading after them, hacking at the bodies rising around her, eyes terrified.
Come on!
Roared Kallis, stretching out his hand, straining to reach her. She was only an arm's length away, when half a dozen dead things surrounded her and bore her down. Her scream cut off abruptly as she went under, and bubbles broke the surface. Kallis and Keltagar tried to cut their way down to reach Brugstad as she thrashed underwater, but more of the dead were rising with every moment, blocking their path and dragging themselves onto the shore. The fetid surface of the swamp turned a deep crimson.
"She's gone,"
said Tol, firing round after round, the grey-black smoke from his pistol churning with the pale white mist. An arm wrapped in rusted chainmail reached out of the mist to grasp the witch-hunter around the throat. A leering skull appeared over the man's shoulder, its yellowed fangs snapping as it sought to bite down into Tol's exposed neck. Tol drove an elbow into the side of the thing's head, and there was a crunch of breaking bone, but its grip did not relent. Kallis stepped forward, trying to keep his balance while straining to reach Tol. He lost his footing in the slick mud and fell, slipping and cursing, back towards the marsh water. Somehow, he managed to grasp a fistful of gnarled roots to stay his descent. He looked up to see Tol stumbling backwards, the skeleton still tearing at his neck. The witch hunter fell, seemingly in slow motion, swallowed up by the mist.
Tol!
Shouted Kallis, crawling forwards on his hands and knees, searching for his companion. There was no reply, and he could see nothing but the ghostly shapes of shambling figures drawing ever closer. He fired, and one of the figures dropped to the ground with a rattling groan.
He is lost, Armand!
Shouted Gedrin. He loosed his bow
and an arrow sailed past Kallus's head to smash a skeleton to the ground. "We must run! This way! Follow my steps!" Kallus took one last look into the thick fog.
"Hanover!"
he shouted, but heard only the echo of his own words in response. It was hopeless. To blunder out into the gloom with the dead all around would be to seal his own fate alongside the witch hunters. He felt numb. It seemed absurd, all that he and Tol had been through, only for the man to fall here. Cursing, he turned and followed Gedrin, who led them higher, along the crest of the mound. It was a strange formation, Kallus noticed. There was an almost artificial curve to it, a gently sloping arc through which rose a great twisted tree of black wood. Gedrin stopped beneath its creaking boughs, watching the others as they approached him. The ground suddenly groaned beneath their weight, the roots splintering. Soil and clusters of leaves tumbled away into a pitch-black hole. Kallus tripped and fell, sliding towards the drop, clutching desperately for a handhold on the mud-slick roots. He stared up at Gedrin.
"Help us!"
he shouted, but the man did not move a muscle.
"Forgive me."
Gedrin reached down and tugged hard at a thick cluster of vines, raising his long dagger in one hand. He sliced down, again and again, and with a loud crack, the roots came apart. The ground beneath Kallus and Keltagar fell away. They toppled end over end as the world spun. Kallus tried to grasp a hold, but could find no purchase. Something ripped at his cheek, and blood splattered across his face. Dirt blinded him and filled his mouth. Suddenly, he struck something with enough force to blast the air from his lungs.
Everything went dark.
Kallus was dragged back to consciousness by a stabbing pain in his face. He brushed a hand against his cheek and felt torn flesh. Groaning, he struggled to his feet, spitting foul-tasting soil. He stared up and saw a trickle of light filtering down from above. That snake, Gedrin. He had led them here, like lambs to the slaughter. But where exactly were they? Someone moaned beside him. He saw a gleam of metal in the darkness. It was Keltagar. The Desreed man stood and teetered, favoring his left leg.
"Are you all right?" asked Kallus.
"Just fine," spat the man. "I warned you, we could not trust that wretch. Now, where are we?"
"Good question," said Kallus. He squinted, waiting impatiently for his eyes to adjust to the gloom. They appeared to be in some kind of tunnel. It looked too smooth to be a natural formation. He ran his hand down the wall to his left and felt something hard and cold. Stone. So this was some kind of ancient structure they had fallen into, built from... His hand brushed over a stone, and he felt a circular indentation. Below that, he ran his fingers over a row of sharp objects, a surface of irregular curves and indentations. A shiver of fear ran down his spine.
"Skulls," he whispered. "Skulls in the walls."
Keltagar bent and picked up his blade. Kallus gathered his own and recovered his pistol, his heart thumping. His eyes had adjusted to the light, and he could see that all around them were bones packed into the earth. Row upon row of grinning skulls and the curving beams of rib cages. Fingers and teeth arranged in spiral patterns that turned his stomach. Hundreds upon hundreds of dead things packed and piled upon each other. Not just human bones, but the fanged skulls of forest beasts and the delicate frames of dead birds. He stepped forward and felt the crunch of more bones underfoot.
"By the God King," whispered Keltagar, "what is this place?"
Ahead, the tunnel curved and descended. Kallus moved forwards carefully, the carpet of bone crunching with every footstep. Ahead, the tunnel ended at the mouth of a cave, a pitch-black archway of stone from which hung several objects that clattered and tinkled in the wind. Animal bones, bound together with long ropes of knotted hair, formed into gruesome marionettes. Runes were carved into the black surface in a language Kallus could not read. They were harsh, childlike etchings, and their simplicity somehow made them all the more unsettling. He edged closer and felt the dangling totems clatter against his leather jerkin as he eased past them. Beyond, a low-ceilinged chamber was formed from tangled roots which curled around each other to create an enormous throne of twisted briar. Upon the throne sat a skeletal figure, head bowed. It was draped in robes of white cloth, and a silk gauze covered its face. Around this figure were scores of skeletons, a congregation near 100 in number, their heads bowed in supplication. Men, women, dwarden, and elves. Some were full-sized, most were small, delicate things. Children, Kallus realized with horror. He moved closer. Behind the throne, he noticed another tunnel, thick with vines and thorny brambles. This one appeared to slope up, and he could see the faint shimmer of light.
"This way," he muttered to Keltigar, who nodded.
Together, they began to inch their way through the chamber, between the kneeling dead. They drew closer to the enthroned figure. Its fleshless hands rested upon the knotted armrests of its seat. In its right fist, it clutched a silver dagger. At the very foot of the throne, kneeling amongst the throng, was a tall, broad-shouldered figure, swathed in a black cloak, and a silver ether hawk embroidered across the back, glittered in the dim light. His shoulder-length hair was black, smeared with mud and dead leaves.
"It's the Junica boy," muttered Keltigar, starting forwards.
The man's head lolled at a strange angle, and his neck was coated in dried blood.
"He's dead," said Kallus. "We must leave."
"We need to retrieve the body," said Keltigar. "Here is the proof that Lord Desrid is innocent of any crime. If we stay here, we'll end up as dead as this one. We have to move."
The soldier ignored Kallus and slowly reached out a hand towards the dead man's head. The wind whistling through the chamber grew louder. Something clattered behind Kallus, making him spin around, raising his sword. He saw nothing but the sea of smiling skeletons. He turned back, shaking his head. The figure on the throne snapped its head up to look straight into Kallus's eyes. He cried out and staggered backwards. The figure rose, drifting up from its throne and into the air, throwing its silk-wrapped head backwards to reveal a gaunt and terrible face, a half-necrotized feminine visage with eyes the color of deep water. A crown of thorns rested upon the creature's brow.
"Ilthua Kanamen,"
it hissed, in a voice like splintering glass.
"Wurak Machbar!"
And then the spirit opened its mouth and screamed. The sound drove a knife through Kallus's heart. He collapsed onto his back, mouth open in horrified agony, as his chest tightened and his muscles tensed so hard that he felt the bones of his left hand pop from their sockets. He spat blood, and his vision swam with crimson. That awful sound! It was a keening wail of pure misery and hatred. His heart skipped a beat, and he tried to breathe, but found he could not draw in the air. Panic gripped him, and he almost blacked out. Abruptly, the keening stopped. Kallus lay there, unable to breathe, unable to move. Slowly, awfully, the spectre drifted above him, staring down at him with malice. The spirit bent down to embrace him, placing its ice-cold fingers upon each side of his head. He gazed into its night-black eyes and saw nothing but a deep and unquenchable hatred. His terror was absolute. The spirit's mouth yawned open, exposing blackened teeth. It came closer and closer. He tried to scream, but could not form the sound. Suddenly the wraith's eyes snapped off to the side, widening first in surprise, then in rage. A sword swept through the air. The spectre hissed as the silver metal swept through its incorporeal form. It spiraled away from the strike in a wisp of green-white light. Kallus felt a hand grab him by the shirt and lift him upright. It was Tol. The witch hunter raised his pistol, the barrel a mere inch from Kallus's temple. As they heard the first awful discordant notes of the spirit's keening wail, Tol fired. The flash of the muzzle left a scar of light across Kallus's vision, and he was thrown backwards. this close to their ears, in the cramped confines of the low chamber, the effect of the gunshot was akin to a cannon discharging. Callis heard nothing but her painful, piercing ringing. He gasped for breath, blue in the face, and finally sucked in a ragged mouthful of air. He saw Tol standing before the floating spectre, one hand clasped with a comet symbol around his neck, the other wielding his silver rapier. The spirit rushed forward, its ragged mouth torn open in a silent scream, its dagger seeking the witch hunter's neck. As the ghost swept in, Tol hurled himself to the side, slashing at the insubstantial body of the creature. The banshee screeched, then whirled and came for the witch hunter again. This time, Tol reached to his belt and hurled a handful of white powder. The spirit recoiled, mouth twisted in agony. It slashed its dagger across, and Tol fell back, a spurt of blood erupting from his left shoulder. The witch hunter's sword spun away into the field of bones. The banshee swooped towards the prone man, hands reaching for Tol's throat. Callis scrambled to his feet, almost tripping over the corpse of Captain Keltigar. The man lay staring sightlessly up at the ceiling, blood pouring from his eyes and mouth. Callis dived for Tol's fallen rapier and took it up in two hands. It was light and perfectly balanced. Even holding it seemed to still his thudding heart. The banshee wrapped its bony fingers around Tol's throat. The witch hunter kicked, struggling and gasping for breath. Callis leapt forwards and drove the tip of the rapier into the spirit's side. The banshee arched its back and began to jerk, sickly green light pouring from its mouth as it spasmed. It